A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, August 12th, 2019, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 255. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, back in the studio, Kato is here.
Hi.
Recharged, energized.
Yeah. Woo!
Woo! Pumped up!
Ready to go.
Wow. Raring to go.
Hi.
Wow, we lost it already. Also here, Danielle Riendo. How are you feeling, Danielle?
Hi, hello.
Good.
I'm okay. I woke up with like a pounding headache.
Hate, stupid.
I was like, what the fuck? Is this bullshit?
But not
I'm
what
okay.
You wanna hear. That's bad.
I'm going to power through.
Power through this Monday. Power through our headaches. Power through the world. Rob Zachney, the source of all power. How are you doing today?
Doing really well. The heat wave like is finally broken, and we are having the best summer weather of the year. It's amazing.
I haven't even wanted to bring it up, but it's been the best. Like here for the last 5 days, I would say. And then like the schedule looking forward, the weather predictions, the what do you
climate?
Call it? Not the climate.
The forecast.
Forecast.
The climate still bad.
Yeah. Forecast good. Climate not great.
Not great.
Forecast this week 80s and 70s. I could live like this forever. And like
hell yeah.
Easy.
People used to.
People used to
live like this.
This was just the way the summer was sometimes. It wasn't 105 degrees. Okay, wow. Wild.
Don't believe it.
Yeah.
It sounds fake.
So nice.
If I didn't remember lighter summers, I wouldn't believe it.
I'm from Florida, so I know fucking summers below 90. What the fuck is this?
It's perfect. Like, it's so nice. I just like, walk around forever. It's beautiful.
And I guess I've
been doing more of that than I have been playing video games this past weekend, over the weekend, since the last recording even, which means, like, I guess I played some Rebel Galaxy Outlaw some more.
Nice.
But other than that, I wasn't really dipping my toes in the virtual worlds that much. I will say.
Around. Anything, your feelings on Rebel Galaxy converging on anything?
Yeah.
You were a little bit like, could take or leave.
I could take or leave. In some ways, they got better, which is I figured out a button that I had missed before, which is the B button lets you turn off your like inertial dampeners or whatever, the thing that lets you fly a spaceship as if it's just a fighter jet and lets you do like drifting in space and spinning 360 degrees.
Hell yeah.
And having that additional
That's a good shit.
Control, yeah, actually made it way more fun to dogfight.
Mm.
I also progressed the story a little bit more, and I'm hitting up against similar things again. It's like I found this little angle by which I was having fun, but now I've kind of crossed over again to like feeling stuff. That stuff's getting repetitive. Mm. I need to know if there are more ships available to buy. Right now, it looks like there are 5 ships to buy in this game. There's like the starting like tugboat. There's a kind of base level not shuttle but a cargo ship basically that's like a mid-tier, you know, like something that you would think of in the vein of like a small shuttlecraft or something. It has like a rear turret and a decent amount of cargo space. Then there's like a small tiny fighter that I'm in. It's like less cargo space but very agile, a bunch of guns. Then there's like a huge cargo ship, and then there is like a mid-sized fighter that is like more guns but slower than the other fighter. Mm. And that seems to be it on all of the like space sectors I've been to, all of the solar systems I've been to. And I'm wondering if like there are rarer ships, or if the pirates have access to different ships, or if – because right now I'm where I want to be in terms of my build, and in a game that's kind of like an open-ended like sandbox, I need goals to set for myself. And if there are those ships, they haven't advertised them to me in any way. Whereas even in Rebel Galaxy, the first one, I could see that there were these giant ships I wanted to fly out the gate. I mean, the other half of this is every port is basically the same. And sorry, I'm getting some interference here. There we go. I've turned off my phone.
oh, no.
every system I go to seems to be the same in terms of, I mean, like, it has different commodities for sale and different commodity prices. But in terms of, like, I want to buy guns, I want to buy shields, I want to, like, upgrade my ship, every dock has the same stuff. I haven't seen any variation. I haven't seen anywhere where it's like, oh, we have the best ion cannons. And that stuff would help so much. Part of me wishes this was a loot game. Like, I don't wish it was a loot game. Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes me – a thing I thought I had the other night while playing was like, what if I picked up rare ion cannons? Or what if I needed to have a different build for different missions? And most of the time, I don't need that. I also just hit a mission, a story mission that was really hard. And I was like, eh, what if I'm done? Instead of just trying to, like, force my way through this thing – what if I'm done? But I don't know.
You gotta find Space Auntie.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, you're playing a Space Auntie. You're playing in this one. You are younger Space Auntie. And she's
That's
cool.
Right.
Juno
Sorry,
seems dope.
I've got it mixed up.
I met a cool robot bounty hunter who I worked with. Like, the story nice. Stuff has been like fun flavor. Nothing too deep, but like, you know, the world seems all right. So I don't know. I think I'm going to be done for now. Or like maybe I'll give it one more night while listening to podcasts or watching TV or whatever and just kind of like push a little bit further, but I'm not even sure what further is right now.
Yeah, something that can be tricky about games like this, and this goes all the way back to Privateer, is that when you have that open-ended structure, what you can't rely on for the most part is really involved mission design.
Right.
The way that like the TIE fighters and free spaces of the world could create like a scripted experience and sort of handcraft both the difficulty of the mission and then what the particular flavor of challenge is. But once you turn it into a little bit more of a RPG where your ship is your character, you run into that RPG but almost MMO-ish problem of fundamentally it's the same game. The numbers are just getting bigger.
Yeah.
And so, like, yes, I just unlocked the ion cannon. But also all the other ships roughly scaled with that, too. They are hitting harder to match my shields. And that can be kind of unsatisfying because then you realize, like, oh, this is a treadmill. And just the amount I've grinded on this treadmill is what determines whether or not I can play the next plot mission and advance the story. And that's a tough place to end up.
That's exactly it. And especially because those plot missions have not been – like a couple of them have had okay moments, but by and large, I'm not having that fun that I had with something like X-Wing or TIE Fighter or Wing Commander even, where it's like, oh, what is the twist in this mission? I don't know. I like space. Yeah. Space is cool.
Space is cool.
Juno Markev, who's the main character, seems cool. But there's just like not too much left on the bone for me. And I don't know. We'll see. But that's kind of it in terms of video games for me. I'm curious what y'all have been up to, if anything, this week. Danielle, have you continued in on Anodyne?
Yes, I have been in New Thieland.
New Thieland.
That's the name of the world of Anodyne 2. Yeah, I put a few more hours in. I sort of got lucky because I got a little sick yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I had planned to train.
That's a weird way of framing it. I mean,
I know. It's weird. My life is what
this is
it is.
This is good. I am stronger. I feel improved morally.
You know, I'm not saying I'm a cyborg, but I'm clearly not because I get sick. But I was supposed to train. I was supposed to go to like a queer open mat, then a class, then like a, you know, jiu-jitsu class, and then another open mat. I was supposed to train for like 6 hours yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But I got sick, so instead I played more Anodyne 2, which was also a good choice. Was also a good choice. I'm really, really, really enjoying it. My first couple of hours in, it was kind of like, I love this team. I love what they make. I talked about it on the podcast last time about, you know, sort of my journey with a lot of their games. And I know I'm going to like it. But some of the 2D, 3D stuff felt like the 3D world does open up a lot. But at first, it's really just this kind of like small city and everything is very... It looks both like a Saturn game, like I talked about before, but like an early Saturn game. Like things are very blocky, very simplistic looking. And it does look in some places like All Our Asias, which was really an experimental game. So it's kind of like, okay, this is an interesting mix of like this like pseudo experimental 3D, which looks cool and has like a really cool feel to it. But it really feels slightly weird with the very tightly designed kind of 2D Zelda dungeons. And I enjoy both of those things. I thought maybe they're mixing a little oddly, but the game has hit something of a stride for me. You know, once you kind of go out into the open world, and it's not like an open world, of course, but a more open overworld. Right. And you can go to sort of people and, you know, the levels, quote unquote, in any order that you'd like to, which is pretty cool. It really opens up quite a bit, and it's its stride in a lot of ways. And it also has this really interesting sort of mid-game area. I don't want to spoil anything, but where it's more heavily focused on the 2D stuff, and the story kind of kicks into gear a little bit more, which is nice. I do think some of the writing is a bit overwrought. That's definitely sort of a pitfall for when you're creating whimsical worlds and whimsical characters and all this kind of stuff. So there are times where I'm like, okay, all right, I've got it. I've got the dialogue. All right, you're writing a song. Okay, we're in it, you know. But I am really enjoying both the 2D and 3D aspects at this point. There's a really beautiful and interesting world here that I sort of, if Breath of the Wild was a two-person hyper indie game, like hyper indie, and I really mean like two people made this game, that's it. Yes. I've seen the credits, two people made this game. Like that scale of massive open-ended world, it would be something like this, which is really, really awesome. And there's a lot of secrets in the overworld. There's a lot of areas where you can do platforming on like, oh, there's this cool waterfall. I wonder what happens if I kind of get to the top of this. Or, oh, there's a weird little underwater area. I wonder what will happen if I go to this. So there is that sort of joy of exploration from early 3D games that I loved and adored. And there is also like, the 2D dungeons are really good, and all of them are exploring different ideas about either the story, like this is going into somebody's mind, body, whatever it is. Like, for example, there is a cool dungeon fairly early on where you're going into this scientist's brain, and he has created some sort of weird little doppelganger, and how that translates into the gameplay is you're always on one side of the screen, and this doppelganger is on another side of the screen, and you're both having to navigate at the same time. It's almost like the... if you played Captain Toad, the areas where you are toads,
and
you have to like control all. Same, I'm doing like weird same, hand motions.
Yes, but, you are using the same like input,
but you control
like,
both of them
at the same time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, totally. Exactly. And you're both navigating things on either side of the screen, that kind of thing. So it's really, really cool, really rad. I'm probably 2/3 or so through the game, so I still have a little bit more to go, but I'm falling in love, as I knew I would. I'm not surprised by my reaction at this point.
Awesome. Well, you will. By the time this goes up, I think you'll probably have a review up on the site, or at least a piece up on the site. I'm not sure. I haven't gone back over it yet to see, like, oh, hey, is this a review?
Probably a piece.
Probably a piece? Okay.
Yeah, more of an essay.
More of an essay than a review. Either. Okay.
Either
or. well, that'll be up on the site if you want a deeper analysis from Danielle, so check that out.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Rob and Kato, y'all are both still on the Fire Emblem train. Yeah. Let's dig in a little bit. What's up with Fire Emblem right now?
I'm really mad.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
I spent all this time and effort really trying to be a good friend to Dudu.
Oh, boy. Dudu's a retainer, my guy.
I fucking didn't know that!
You can never recruit retainers.
Damn.
Every time you talk to them, they go like, also, wait, what do you mean you were trying to be a good friend? You literally can't do anything.
No, you can invite him to meals and shit.
Yeah, of course. But you can, when you go up to talk to them, you can't do.
I
there's not even a menu.
I didn't realize that the menu was. I don't know what I did, but I'm like, how? I don't know how many months in. I'm like, I'm fucking into this game. And every time I go in, I've been inviting him to cook because I know he likes to cook. I did it the first time. And he's like, oh, he likes this. That's sick. Let's cook. We cook every meal together. We have.
Kato.
I just wanted him to be on my team.
No.
Love he to is... get catfished by my team.
Kato.
I could have sworn the first time I talked to everyone, I thought I saw a recruit button at some point, somewhere, sometime.
The retainers can't. They are. They are the ones.
It was a retainer button.
Let me tell you about. Dope. A little class called the Blue Lions.
Yeah, if you want to be the dude's friend so bad,
damn it.
It's worth it. It is a journey worth taking. I think it's easily like the best part of this playthrough. Like the day-to dynamic with everyone else is really good. Being Davey's friend is good times. I think it single-handedly justifies playing the game. Yes. I haven't played everything, but it seems safe to say that it is the best thing in Fire Emblem Three Houses. And if you can't be Davey's friend, really, you should probably just start over and blow away all the progress.
Hit the reset button.
Because progress towards what? Just a sucking void that is Claude?
You're good. That's what I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
You're good.
All right.
Don't worry about it.
I figured. It was very funny listening to
I will say I left this game feeling, despite going Golden Deer, feeling strongly about the Dew.
Good.
The Dew seems dope.
Great.
That's the title of my op-ed. The Dew seems dope. Which is not, I'm not going to talk about spoilers. I'm not going to talk about what happens.
Yeah.
But I am going to just say, Dadoo seems dope.
I had a
Dadoo gets his due in the Golden Deer storyline.
Yeah.
He does. He gets his due. 100%.
That's great.
You had a tweet, you said, or you had a...
I had a tweet go get popular over the weekend about Fire Emblem.
Congratulations.
Wow, he went right up to the precipice of, say, go viral, and like, hit the brakes on that train of thought, like, so hard.
It just surprised me, because it was very simple, and I assumed everyone else noticed this thing when it came up. This is a small spoiler.
Oh, the Fire Emblem.
The Fire Emblem.
Yeah, of course.
Like, but all of the mentions on that are people being like, oh my god,
Phoenix
what?
Phoenix Down moments,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly, yeah. Which is hilarious.
Do you want to explain this for
Yeah, them? So in this game, there's these things called crests that certain, like, it's like bloodlines have these crests associated with them, apparently. And they give you powers sometimes, and the one that your main character has is the Crest of Flame, to which I immediately screen capped, posted on the internet, and said, so, like, an emblem. A fire.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of people miss this, which I think is very funny. Fire That's Emblem. Fire
I had that same thought. I wasn't sure. I was like, is that the Fire Emblem?
Is that
I need somebody to lean over and whisper, That's the Fire Emblem.
Oh, you know what I did this weekend? I watched the last couple of scenes of Chappie. That movie fucking rules.
Good. That's great.
But no, that's the Fire Emblem. Every Fire Emblem game has a Fire Emblem.
Right.
It's a different thing in each game. It is not always the same thing. Yeah. Sometimes it's not even shown. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's like the family crest of an important house, and it's like described once or something, you know? But other times it's like, oh, this is a fucking... sword.
Right.
This is the magical sword. It's called the Seal of Flames or whatever. You know, but there is always a fire emblem of some sort.
Good. That's great.
So that's
the name of the game.
Yeah, totally. besides Dadoo being good, besides the fire emblem showing up, are y'all both still on board?
Yeah.
I know it's only been a few days, Rob, since I checked in with you, but you're still having a good time?
Well, I just rounded like 32 hours into the game, so I am flying. Just had some Jack Lemmon lookalike motherfucker go bad on me.
I had to
sort that situation out. And then there was a really good reveal where, like, the Pope lady says something to you that legitimately brought me to a screeching halt.
Yeah,
like, literally. I was like, wait,
what did you pick in the dialogue? I know exactly the point you're talking about. Not going to say it out loud because people are still playing this game. But there's a point where there's a slip, basically, right?
Yeah.
Is that the point you're talking about?
I played it super casual. And like, oh, gosh, I guess I just hadn't heard that before. Yeah, I played it super.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. good.
I had suspected this a couple times, but yeah.
But that is the thing that works. That's one of the things that's so wild about the writing in Three Houses is most of the time, things are unfolding in ways that are not completely shocking. It's not out of left field. It's, 13 hours ago, I had this brief spark of a thought that was like, I wonder if... And then when that gets confirmed, it gets confirmed in a way that is actually kind of masterful in the way it's deployed. Because things like this, there's a moment that Rob is talking about where a character reveals something true about the world to you. And like Rob, I wonder if earlier it seemed like that might be the case. But the way it is not like a huge lore dump when that happens, it's just kind of like added as another element of the mystery. It doesn't make it seem like someone is pulling back like a piece of the tapestry so much as they're giving you more stuff to think and theorize about.
Well, and I think this is something where the long form nature of a game like this really plays into its favor, because the game goes on long enough that you forget that stuff is significant, but it's become part of the scenery. It becomes an assumption you no longer question. Yes. And so when the game circles back around and says like, hey, wait a second, this is weird though, right? This is unusual to you. And you're like, holy hell, it is. Like, you know, I haven't thought about it in 20 hours.
Right.
But
I've been busy leveling up my battalions or whatever. And actually, what I should have been doing is thinking about the A plot. yeah, totally.
Another thing, so Sylvain update.
Yeah. Still a fuckboy?
So he's becoming a really interesting character in ways that maybe like the game might adore this guy way too much. Like he's just kind of good at everything, but it also increasingly seems to be pointing like in a direction that maybe there's a Prince Hal type situation happening with this guy. Cause he's had a couple interactions with other characters, and when he is left alone, and the scene doesn't end with the end of the conversation, but you see him by himself, and it's his internal monologue. He is revealed to be a perhaps angrier and more revolutionary character than anyone I've met in the game.
Interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, like he is, like there are a couple times, and once he lets the mask slip with another character that he doesn't mean to. There is a point, I don't think the scene works super well. There's a point where he's hanging out with Annette, who is this young mage with blue lions. And she's working really hard on a spell book. And he just takes one look at it and solves a really hard problem. And then he kind of does the like, oh, you know, I'm just, you know, I didn't do anything special there. I guess I'm just naturally good at this. Ha ha ha. And it's like he's an incredibly annoying archetype at that moment. The dude who's like going to swoop in and explain a woman's work to her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also like is just better at it than she is. Like from a writing standpoint, I don't love the approach. But the thing that might salvage the scene is that Annette doesn't buy it. Right. She's like, no, you did. She's like, there's no way you just looked at this and deduced that. There's no way that you just did a cold read of this book, of this textbook.
Because I'm fucking smart. I know what it's taken to get me to this point. You're hiding.
Yeah, something. And she's like, are you secretly busting ass on all of this when nobody's looking?
Right.
And he's like, no, you're better at this. Like, I just got lucky. Is all. Well, I have to go. I've got flirting to do, and he just like jetpacks out of the conversation. But there've been a few times where Sylvain seems like genuinely that part of me that like was looking at this game and was like, this school sucks. This society sucks. Like I might hate all of this. Sylvain is increasingly the character maybe giving expression to that.
Huh. I can't believe they made Kaji a character in Final Fantasy.
I was going to say that, but based on what I did last time, I was like, oh, I shouldn't.
Well, that's just Kaji. That's just who
Kaji
is. No,
but Kaji's good. Yeah, the Kaji's good.
God, fuck. Well, I'm slowly coming to terms with the fact that I probably will not play those other routes this year, and I'll just have to let other people do it, and we'll talk about it when it's done. That seems like
when does the game get hard?
I think...
As a Fire Emblem newbie, here's the thing I don't get.
Yeah.
As the tactics game, I'm just rolling over everything. And it's fun. It's a visual novel thing where like there's just enough.
The thing that you can do to make it harder is to stop doing side stuff, right? It only gets hard if you're not like maxing out all the side stuff, doing the paralogue, or keep doing the paralogues because there's good story stuff there. But like if all you're doing is the main missions and you're like a level or two behind all the time, that's going to be the only time. I think the mission design gets more interesting, but it does not necessarily get more difficult. What it ends up doing is giving you more space to play with the tools that you have in fun ways. But like, I never was at a point, especially because you start to unlock more divine pulses. I actually got sloppier as the game continued because I was like, fuck it, man. I have 10 divine pulses. Like, let's just play around. And so my advice to you is either, I mean, you can't knock the difficulty up is the problem. That's the thing that I wish you could do. I wish you could turn up from normal to hard, because I bet hard would be serving you better at this point. But also, I'm not going to ask you to replay the first 30 hours of this game. You know what I mean?
That'll be for my Empire playthrough.
Right, exactly. And so maybe that's the secret here is like, just bust ass through this, just like run through the rest of Blue Lion and then get to your Empire playthrough that is going to be harder by nature of it being on hard, you know?
Yeah.
You're playing on Classic at least, though, I'm guessing, which is like a little bit more tension, but yeah, I'm not like, but I've never really, it's never really what I've come to Fire Emblem for. I've gone to other tactics games for that difficulty. Again, because the difficulty in past Fire Emblem games was mostly felt by me making a decision that wasn't about like tactical error so much as the invisibility of information being punished for that, and then needing to restart a mission and make the same first 15 moves again exactly, you know, like that's not good difficulty. That's frustrating difficulty that doesn't necessarily I enjoyed those games with that difficulty. I left it in classical mode. I liked the tension of feeling like I might lose someone, but I, given a choice, that's not what I would prefer.
I've seen this suggestion floating around that if you're if you're already into tactics game, hard but casual is a good place to start.
Interesting.
If this is your first Fire Emblem coming off other
coming off of like stuff. XCOM or Final Fantasy Tactics or something,
and then like other playthroughs, you turn classic back on.
That makes sense. Right? Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Hard casual. That's how I roll.
That's how I think so. Any other Fire Emblem thoughts, or should we head to a break? We'll keep checking in every week on Fire Emblem, because if we don't, then what we'll have, the Earth will spin off of its axis. I'm really happy that people are enjoying it, and I'm so curious to see how the back half shakes out for Rob, as the only person I know in the world who's playing as the Blue Lions. It sounds good.
Wow.
Deidu's only friend,
Rob Zachney.
God damn it.
Robin Deidu, just hanging out. All right, we will be right back after this break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. Rob, I hear you've been to space a little bit also, in a sense.
A little bit.
It sounds like, so you've told me you've played two different games. I think there's a place here for one of those jokes that's like, you've played a game where the crushing superstructure and the indifference of space and of machines and of the world and the universe has shown you how fallible and easy to die humans are and how replaceable they are. And you've also played System Shock 2.
That's the process, everybody. You got a front row seat to it.
That's there it.
It is.
Do that, and then, but I'm typing it, so I'm faster there, and then I delete a bunch of it.
Yeah.
And then I go, and then this is the trick. Then I Google it, or I search for it on Twitter to see if someone's made the joke already.
Yes.
And then I retweet it if it's already been made. And if it hasn't already been made, then I make it. That's all. That's it. That's the process.
That's how you write. That's how to be a writer.
Be a writer. Exactly. Check to make sure you're not like just duplicating someone else's work. And if you are, give them their due.
Be a writer. Just stay on Twitter. Search stuff. Post good tweets.
That's it.
Writing.
What's that?
I mean, tweeting is writing.
Tweeting is writing.
Tweeting is
short
poetry.
Form. Yeah.
That's right. So, micro fiction, micro prose. Micro prose is already a different thing.
Yeah.
A different thing already. But you know, you get what I'm saying. I made a joke tweet recently that I was shocked no one else had made. It was like one of those things that I did search for and was just like confused that no one had made it. I was like, I guess it's going to be me then. I guess I'm going to be the one who fucking makes it. I don't remember what that tweet is. So,
oh no, this is
a useless diversion.
Well, that was a bad detour.
What the fuck was it?
I don't, how recent was it?
Can clean this up, right?
No, leave
clean.
It. Leave it. Leave it. Who knows? Rob, tell us about either System Shock 2, which you're revisiting, or Oxygen Not Included, the other game we were talking about in that introduction. What was what are you having fun, or do you just want to suffer right now? Not that System Shock 2 is bad, but that is absolutely a game about being made to suffer.
Yeah, I think part of it is, as Fire Emblem has been such a breeze in some ways, just a pleasurable curl up on the couch and enjoy some good socializing with some cool kids. I think System Shock 2 has been kind of a useful counterpoint, right? A little bit of bitter to the sweet. And I have been, I am always surprised how well that game holds up when I do go back to revisit it. It's something I've played a lot since it came out. It was something that I was really excited about when it first, I remember vividly like the PC Gamer review that came out in 99 and leafing through that in a driver's ed class.
Yes.
Instead of paying attention to literally anything that was happening around me. I played racing games. I was fine. Like, I didn't need, need a driver's ed class.
Yeah.
What could they teach me that Papyrus already hadn't? But what I have been really kind of impressed by as I've been playing System Shock 2 is just how the game never looks like I remember. Everything is so much chunkier and blockier, and like it just is never quite the game I remember it being. And then that initial kind of lack of familiarity, that sort of alienation I feel from the game, quickly fades away, and it starts getting really creepy and intense in some ways. And I think playing through it now, I think what's dawned on me is that there's kind of an uncanny valley, I think, that exists, or at least something like the curve of the uncanny valley exists in game graphics, but particularly around horror.
Yeah.
Where mid-2000 stuff looks really rough. Like, that, I think, tends to be the hardest era for me to go back to, because it is really striving closer and closer toward what we considered the goal then to be like photorealism, just a more realistic, convincing portrayal of a game's reality. And stuff since then has increasingly bridged that gap. Like, every year, stuff looks more and more convincing, looks more and more like the literal object it's trying to represent. And then stuff before that, because it is so abstracted, because it is like struggling to get across these ideas with a really limited tool set, in some ways, I think it ends up traveling better across time. Like, it ends up landing better with you today than stuff that was made on more advanced platforms. And I think System Shock 2, as I've been playing it, I think there is something, there's kind of a sweet spot effect happening with System Shock 2. It being maybe, is it the last game on the Dark Engine that Looking Glass had? I think it might be.
Was there not a Thief game after that? I guess not.
I don't think there was one on the Dark Engine. Because Looking Glass totally was gone by the time.
Yeah.
So it ends up like it's a little bit of a dated engine.
No, that's not true. Thief 2 is 2000. Sorry.
Oh, is it?
Just yeah, after.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
God.
System Shock is 99. They're very close.
For some reason, I remember it being Thief 2 and then...
Me too, but no, Thief 2 is after System Shock 2.
Hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, this is all weird. It doesn't matter. They're so close. Like.
But right, but there's... And probably developed somewhat concurrently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in terms of just the way that game looks, everything is incredibly crude, and the textures, I think in particular, the textures all just look really stretched and weird in that game. But in the end, I think that makes everything feel more alien and more horrifying. Ooh. And the way I remember the game is mostly in terms of how I think the game wants these monsters to come across, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really remember, for instance, like, probably the character I find scariest in the game is the cyborg midwife.
Yeah.
And that is an enemy that's revealed in the third level, the hydroponics deck, which is a really good and terrifying level. But the cyborg midwife is this really crude, awkward-looking character model. It is meant to be, like, evoke a young woman who's been, like, plugged into a bunch of cybernetics and, like, surgically modified. But in the way the game portrays that, it's kind of a lot of blocky, gray, metallic pixels and then some, like, bloody red striated muscle, like, textures up above. And it looks very weird. It's very hard to actually perceive any real features to it. But in the way I remember it, all the gaps are kind of filled in my head. Like, I kind of remember the monster as being what the story tells you it is, which is a group of nurses who were effectively slowly abducted and, turned into servants of these, like, alien eggs on the hydroponics deck by this increasingly mad scientist character who was running the deck. And the entire storyline of that level is the revelation of what this guy is up to and what he's doing and the role it plays in causing everything to go bad. But so even though the model doesn't suggest a lot of this, there's something indefinite about the way it looks. Hmm. And then things that are really specific about the audio cues around it that end up making it a really palpable kind of horror for me. In a way that, like, I think if you made a much more modern version of this, where, like, you could perfectly model and render the idea of, oh, this is somebody who was involuntarily, like, transformed into a cyborg, I think that could look like kind of corny in RoboCop. And it wouldn't, yeah. You know what I mean? It wouldn't necessarily carry that same, it wouldn't necessarily land on the same level.
To that point, earlier in our Slack today, Rob, you linked this terrible version of it from a mod from the Rebirth mod. Right?
Yep.
There's a bunch of things that are like super distinct, but basically it's like they took this character design, this monster design that is like, oh, okay, this is a person who's been abducted, who is whose elements of their design are still absolutely meant to be feminine, right? Like the cyborg midwife of the original model has very, very like comically wide hip, metallic hips have been installed.
Yep.
They've made her into, it also doesn't have a face. Important thing, the skin on the original cyborg midwife's face has been pulled off. So almost looks like, for some reason they remind me of the aliens from Mars Attacks, which is like these big bulging eyes because of the way their face looks. The new model boobs out, definitely has a face, like
her
long
hair. Is like,
yep.
This is just a porn model face.
This is a porn model face.
Clearly.
100%. Yeah. I mean, like, the most distinct thing is in the old model, the metal goes up to the boobs and, like, has, you know, there's a degree to which it looks like it's just like a metallic, like, bra on or something, I guess. Yeah. But the new model on this from this mod doesn't even do that. The metal stops at the waist and torso up is just skin and bones, just flesh. It's just like, those are just boobs right there. And it's corny.
And
it's corny. And a power glove. You're right. Sorry. They also included
a power
glove.
She does have a power glove. What the hell does she have in her left hand?
I think that's just a person on the ground.
Something on the ground.
Yeah, behind. It does look like she's holding a Barbie.
Oh, I see.
I think that's just a body on the ground behind her.
Gotcha. Yeah, I zoomed in and that's what that is. I thought she was like,
so bad.
She had a flesh stick or something. I don't know. Don't
and a lot of the character models in that Rebirth are like similarly bad. It's this attempt to, I need to make everything look realistic.
Right.
But you actually don't, right? Like that's the thing. What you're trying to get across is there are people being turned into unholy cyborgs. There's people who have basically been infected by like an alien collective and are slowly being turned into an alien monster, but have just enough vestigial humanity. This isn't I don't know how you realistically render a lot of this stuff. I think it ends up, but I think a lot of games that post-date System Shock 2 end up trying to, in some ways. They end up trying to portray, like, this is how it would look if you were doing this with, like, practical effects in a movie. System Shock 2 can't play that game. And so what it has to do is rely a lot on the impression something gives you in motion and at a distance, and I can't stress this enough, let the audio do the work, mm-hmm. too. This is a game that uses sound very, very well, and still does. And I think one of the things that makes it work is you will hear these monsters way, way more often than you see them. Like, mm-hmm. when you see them, usually that means there is a very fast combat sequence about unfolding. Like, you're not getting shootouts with these things. They come and they either mess you up or you mess them up, but it ends very quickly. Most of the time, the way they exist is as a distant animation you see and mm-hmm. a couple audio cues you hear. And all that stuff is deeply freaking disturbing. And that is, you just sort of ruminate on that in your head far more than you spend, like, considering the actual model or what these things look like. And so I think that makes it feel a little bit more convincing to me as a horror game than, say, Dead Space 2. Dead Space, which feels very much like it's drawing from lessons of System Shock. I don't think the horror resonates with me as much.
Really?
You look at, like, oh, it's the baby enemy, baby head with the spider legs. Like, okay. That's scary, but it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's a piece of concept art that's, like, creepy, but it doesn't live outside of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, so one of the reasons that the timing on this is great is that Night Dive Studio just announced, that I think it's Night Dive, right? That they would be doing an enhanced edition of System Shock 2. I did just see, or I guess, is the enhanced, they're also just remaking System Shock 2, right?
They're remaking System Shock 1.
Got you. Right. Okay.
And that is as I understand, that's going to be a really involved effort into basically making System Shock 1 into a modern immersive sim.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. That's a weird territory, right?
Danielle, I'm
curious
about
your thoughts.
I mean,
that game's UI itself is just, like, how do you... Brilliant people, brilliant designers exist who could do this. But that game was so much about its, like, insane UI and managing that in any given system, any given scenario.
You're talking about the first System Shock.
The
UI. Because the UI is so distinct from what we think of as immersive sim UI contemporarily, which is that, you know, most immersive sim stuff now, I mean, especially in the post-BioShock world, is, like, pretty minimal. Maybe there's some, like, weapon or, like, gadget or power wheels, but, like, at any given moment, you are just looking at, like, the world, like a first-person shooter. But the original System Shock UI had much more in common with something like Wizardry,
like,
or
box
other
around you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There's a kind of view screen in the middle of the screen that lets you see the world around you, but then was surrounded by just excessive UI with maps mm-hmm. and menus and, you know, a list of what you had installed or what you had available to you. Such a different thing. I'm so
Which
curious.
Which exact posture was your character in?
Right. Right.
Were you?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, you had lean crouch,
right.
roll.
Yep.
It's kind of a ridiculous game, but also it is so systems intensive. Because this was kind of the... I guess in some ways probably the more influential Looking Glass game that in retrospect, the most influential one was probably Thief, because mm-hmm. that did go much more minimalist. That did go much more, you are, like, sort of immersed in the moment, and the number of things you need to track is pretty simple. It's mostly about using things in the environment to figure out, like, how to go about your mission. But System Shock 1 reminds me a lot of, like, Terra Nova, which was, like, Looking Glass Games, the other sort of character that they could have was kind of this real fixation on involved, intricate systems, right? Where you weren't just a character who was running around like, ah, I see a thing and I shoot at it, but was instead, well, what if everything sort of operated like a flight sim or something like that? That's how System Shock feels, is like it's a first-person shooter, but what if you were controlling a really advanced mech sim in that game?
Yeah.
And it feels super weird when you go back to it. This is why I tend to prefer System Shock 2. System Shock 2, I can just go back and I can play that. I inhabit that space sort of natively from a design standpoint. When I go back and play System Shock 1, it is cool, but it's also alien in a way. Oh, this is a different evolutionary branch than I ended up living in.
Right. Can we just quick shout outs to Terra Nova Strike Force, Centauri, the game you just mentioned, which is also a Looking Glass Studio game, is a mech game that the people who made System Shock made, or the same studio anyway. That was filled with FMV. Just early good. 90s, mid 90s FMV shit all the way through that game. I think Night Dive has the rights, or did they republish the original version of it? They should do an enhanced edition of that with all the same
FMV.
Yeah,
it's a very cool game.
Please. Yeah.
Not even remaster or anything.
Just no, the same, don't even remaster. Just give me the same FMV, same stamp sized video, please.
Definitely stretch it to full screen, though.
Oh, yeah, please.
Just all pixels.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to be bathed in pixels. God.
Delicious.
The other space game that you've been playing, I'd love to hear about that too, Rob, if you want to talk about it. You just like shook your head if you were afraid to talk about Oxygen Not Included.
Yeah, it's what's Tyler Sigmund from Red Hook Studios described it really well to me on Twitter. He said it's Dwarf Fortress for people who organize their fridge by atomic weight.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That is not a bad summary of Oxygen Not Included, which in is some ways, but
Clay game that came out this year. Nicole Clark did a review for us a couple of months ago, actually, right?
Yeah,
and I think she understood the game, so you should read her review from somebody who had spent like over a year sort of like internalizing this game. Because for me, So there's this really memorable sequence in The Expanse, I think season 2 or 3, where this botanist is describing how a space station, even though it is still functioning, is already doomed. He's explaining how like all the systems need to be in balance. This artificial ecosystem doesn't have a lot of resilience. Everything needs to be working in the correct proportions. And any sort of disruption in that loop, in that cycle, means that that disruption will propagate through the entire system. And so a small deviation becomes, on the next rotation, a larger deviation until the entire thing oscillates out of control and everything flies apart. That's Oxygen Not Included. And as far as I can tell, most of the game is just seeing how far you can figure, like how far you can get before the oscillation begins to like break up your space station. But it's very much in a, You've kind of got an ant farm view of all these like space colonists, and you have to make sure their life support needs are met. And as the population increases, and as you increasingly have to begin generating resources on your own rather than like relying on what you imported initially. Mm-hmm. Sort of the initial solutions that you're given, for instance, like waste disposal starts as an outhouse. Eventually, you need like serious plumbing. You need, and also that stuff needs to be repurposed into ways that it can service, water treatment, agriculture. All these things need to work together. But as you begin, you don't tier up everything at the same time. You research it bit by bit. And so the other part of this is you will have more advanced technologies come into play before all the supporting technologies you really need to make it work are really completed.
Gotcha.
And so this is the other thing, is as you're upgrading your space station, increasingly the early stuff that you have becomes a liability for you, but you can't take it offline because you can't replace it all immediately. You're kind of stuck with it. So it's also kind of a crumbling space infrastructure game. And that is, it turns out, a way, way harder proposition than your typical city builder, which is a clean slate, right? You can always just, oh, I got new stuff. I'm just going to put this in. This will give me bonuses to food production, to living capacity, all that. Here it's, damn, unfortunately, the best living quarters I have are full of, you know, trash, old pipe work, just completely inadequate facilities. But if I tear it all down and blow it away, immediately I've cut to the bone of this colony. And I'm going to run into trouble unless my rebuild goes perfectly, which it probably won't, because this is also a game of small changes having unintended consequences. For instance, you know, you accidentally breach a wall into an underground reservoir, and instead of having a nice pool of fresh water, you've actually just flooded your entire space station. And now everyone is just wading through contaminated water and getting sick.
Wow.
Love it. Love
I'm reading
to
the
live.
Review and I'm just like, yeah, there are apparently levels to the levels to the levels to the levels here. That is probably really addicting, to be honest.
Yeah, I really like this style of like colony builder or like simulation, you know, kind of social simulation games, things like Dwarf Fortress. Yeah. And, you know, I early on its development, I played a ton of RimWorld before it was very clear about what that how that dude was and still dipped into it afterwards because I was like, hey, I have this game already. I already bought this fucking game. Let me play a little bit more of it. this guy sucks, and the way gender and sexuality are implemented fucking blow. But RimWorld still was fun, so I kept playing it and felt guilty about it. But there is something about Oxygen Not Included that scares me. And like I, to the degree that I personally would rather play Dwarf Fortress and see my dwarves, you know, be devoured by saber-toothed tigers or be destroyed in a cave-in or flood. Hmm?
See?
See what?
See or read about.
Play.
Yeah. No, I just mean the biggest gotcha. Barrier for that game has always been the like...
Oh, no, there's great... No, there's fantastic tile sets at this point already.
Sure.
People play that, like, the...
That's what I meant by, see, do you really see them get...
You do. Anything? No, they're absolutely you do. Like, yeah. I resist... Dwarf Fortress is a difficult game to get into because it is a rare type of game to play. It is not a thing that is like a lot of other games. And I think that, like, we lean into talking about it as... obscurantist and its tiles. We talk about like ASCII art instead of talking about the fact that it has very pretty tile sets at this point that do communicate like atmosphere and space and tone just as much as like any really, really good roguelike does.
Those come with the game now?
You'd easily download just, those things. And yeah. Also there is the Steam version that's supposed to come out sometime in the near future that has them built in. But like there are very simple guides to getting into Dwarf Fortress at this point. And it does not mean that you will have like the ridiculous high-end super Dwarf Fortress player experience out the gate. Mm-hmm. Shout outs to Jack DeKeat, a friend of the site, former, you know, who's written for the site before. They are currently doing a like Dwarf Fortress for Beginners stream series that is fantastic.
Oh, nice.
That is them learning the game alongside with you. That's like 100% built in a way that ignores the discourse around that game and its difficulty and instead is like about figuring out things to enjoy inside of that space. Regardless, my point is I would rather play Dwarf Fortress, which is still a difficult game in terms of like even if you know how to play the game, it can be difficult to succeed. Mm-hmm. Then Oxygen Not Included, which is a game from one of my favorite developers, Clay, that puts me off because I think I am just less interested in building the machine that works. I don't want to play Factorio. I want to play the game that's about personalities clashing. Do you know what I mean? I want to play the game. And I'm not saying this has none of that stuff. There is some clear differentiation between characters. And I'm certainly not saying that this game shouldn't find an audience. It seems super well made. It seems like it is built to have that nice overlap between systems management and like tinkering until the machine works. And then the like fun interactions of characters who like clash in some ways or have different needs or whatever. But yeah, like a part of me just, it is scary. I think you're totally right, Rob, that like seeing what the game expects in terms of like a well-functioning, you know, system is a little bit too much for me. I don't know. Is there here's the other thing I'm thinking about now is when I think about these sorts of games, the ones that work best for me, even if you put like something like The Sims in this category, this broad category, which I think I would in terms of social simulation games, one of the things I like the most about them, and this is true for The Sims, for RimWorld, for Dwarf Fortress, is the sense that there is an outside world. That there is something, you know, in Dwarf Fortress, every few years, a new you know, wave of dwarves shows up, or, a wave of goblins or elves show up. There's a history. There's a space outside. In The Sims, you have next door neighbors. You have public spaces. In RimWorld, you have neighboring tribes. You have new, you know, space pirates arriving, stuff like that. Is there any sense of an outside world in Oxygen Not Included, or is it really like, here is your space colony, make it function as best as you can?
So I can't speak absolutely on this because I am still struggling to survive like any kind of middle game effectively. but to me so far, it feels like there's nods in the direction of personality, but not necessarily in a way that makes it real and relevant to what you're doing in terms of building your base. And mm-hmm. So what you have are, they're called dupes in the game. They're sort of replicants who show up in the fabricator and form your colony. Yeah, again, they show up at regular intervals, and partly it's to be extra helping hands, but also it's partly to further burden your already overtaxed infrastructure. And so immediately like, hey, I've got a larger workforce. Oh, shit, I need to immediately start converting that into more resources. But what I don't get a strong sense of is that there's a story of a world happening around me. Like, it feels right now for me, it is very much a infrastructure and systems optimization game. And also countering the ways that the systems break down. But the personality is mostly implied, I think, to give you a bit of flavor. So this character is good at certain types of tasks. You see them have cute little conversations, but it doesn't necessarily create a narrative the way Dwarf Fortress is kind of infamous for creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like the worst way to get me involved, you know? That is like the thing where, which is fine. It's just one of those things that's like, you know what? Good for me. I can go play Clay's other game in development right now, Griftlands. A game I like a lot that has gotten a lot of great updates, that has a really cool world in it and a sense of character. And
there's new shit?
Yeah, there's new shit. Oh, shit. You get a pet dog now, a pet alien dog. You can get, like, all the aliens have different cool special abilities. Like, a whole bunch of different shit. It's really cool.
Tell me
really
a little bit about this, because this sounds...
Did you
pretty
see
cool.
this at all? Did you see Griftlands? No. Okay, so Griftlands is currently in alpha on the – I think right now it's only on the Epic Store. It will be coming everywhere when it launches. They have historically done their like alphas on different platforms. I think Don't Starve was just on the Chrome Store originally. You could only play it via Chrome. Back like we did a stream.
That's actually how I played it at first.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah. So it is a – I think I've given it a soft pitch before on here. I really like it a lot. It is a card-based... It is like a Slay the Spire. It's like a narrative Slay the Spire, okay. If that makes sense. It is a deck-building game, by which I mean that as you play the game, you collect cards from succeeding at conflict. Like, from succeeding at... I say conflict because it's fights, but it's also like negotiations or social conflicts. There's kind of a battle deck and also a social deck, a negotiation deck. And whenever you succeed at either of them, you get a new card. And then also you can get new cards from other things, like events that are spread around this world map. You are, in the current build, a bounty hunter who is kind of a bounty hunter or a fixer more generally, who is trying to get revenge on this person who sent you to like the kind of space mines, who basically like sold you into space slavery. And you're like, you know what? No, fuck you. I'm back and I'm coming to get mine. It takes place in this really interesting world that is filled with fascinating and like very smartly described factions whose again description kind of shows up very naturally, very organically in the way that characters talk about them. It reminds me a lot in the way that it's kind of story stuff progresses of what's the fantasy sports game that we all liked for a few years ago.
Oh, Pyre.
Pyre.
Oh, right? Yeah,
Pyre in that.
Oh, nice.
In that, like, yeah. It does a lot of world building through very conversational dialogue, very naturalistic in the sense that people just talk about their lives, and you as the player can mouse over certain terms to get a little bit more information, but it's never like open the lore Bible, open the the galaxy encyclopedia to learn more about the fish god or whatever, right? The core of it, the thing that I think makes it really cool is I think the world is part of what brings me back to it, but the two decks idea, the idea that you have a battle deck that you're building out one style of play, and then you have this negotiation deck and you're building out an entirely different style of play, and the two types of card interactions are different. That, like, the battle deck and the combat stuff feels a lot like Slay the Spire, but with more characters on your side sometimes, where you'll have, like, allies who could go into fight with you. And that stuff's really cool. I've played more of it, and I've hit, like, big boss fights or, like, mini boss fights where it's, like, been me plus four other characters or three other characters on my side up against, like, one giant boss.
Oh, cool.
I felt like a weird alien fish monster at some point. It was sick.
That's the fish god.
The fish god. I don't think it was actually the fish god, but now that I think about it, I bet if they worshipped – if you were – people who worshipped the fish god, they wouldn't have liked that I fucked with their – with that big fish. The
seems a safe bet.
Yeah, probably. It's
Austin standing over his sacred fish, just like dagger marks all over it. This is not going to play well.
This is not, we got to get out of here. Which is part of the thing that the game does really well. Let me talk about the combat stuff and the negotiation stuff, and then I'll talk about the social stuff, which it does do. So the combat stuff is pretty straightforward. You have, like, a deck of cards, your hand of cards, and maybe that says, like, go do two damage or go do two damage plus one bleed, and then next round they'll take one extra damage. You also have, like, defense cards that you can play and target yourself or target an ally to defend them from incoming damage. You know, it's, again, if you think of something like Slay the Spire, or if you think of something like, what was the other card game that came out this year that Patrick was playing through forever?
Steam World Quest.
Oh,
or
yeah.
If you think of any sort of card game that includes characters who are interacting with each other. So, like, sort of like Magic, but longer term interactions, not just like here is a battle, it's over pretty quickly, you know, pretty quickly. It's in that space. And you know, there's cool combos to build and different types of builds around, okay, do you want to do poison type damage? Do you want to be a very defensive character? I had a build once that was all about setting my character up to get hit, but doing tons of counter damage, where I would just have, like, every card I played increased the amount of counter damage I would do. And I would just, like, stack that to the roof and then make it so that people were attacking me and not my allies somehow. And I was just, like, dealing back damage like wild.
Nice.
The negotiation, like, conflict stuff, the negotiation card game ends up being this other thing where you have to – it's kind of hard to explain. There's your opponent and you have HP, have resolve, right? But you also have other things that have HP called arguments. And these are things you kind of float up and that orbit around your character and that themselves can be targeted. So, for instance, there's a skill that you can get pretty early on that gives your character a thing called awareness. And awareness means that you're going to do the best damage you can do with a certain card type. It's basically like, I'm going to be nice in this conversation. And so I have awareness. And that awareness will slowly tick away over time. You have to kind of re-up it as, like, as a thing that you're doing with your turns. So you're like, okay, I'm always going to have awareness up, so I'm always doing max damage with my, like, be a nice person cards. you know, those are cards that are like, hear me out, buddy, or, you know, stuff that's just kind of like more about trying to, like, even the playing field or make it seem like you're coming from a good place. But your opponent can target your arguments and not just your HP, not just your resolve. And so they can, like, target your awareness, which fictionally is about, like, throwing you off your game and making it so that you're not, like, in the right frame of mind to do the best with the art, with the cards you're going to play, basically, right?
So this is Twitter.
It's Twitter. It's basically Twitter. Right. It's like Twitter with more rules, which we know Twitter needs, honestly.
Sure.
Though I think Twitter will eventually add more rules, but one of them won't be don't be a Nazi, unfortunately. So they'll still keep all the Nazis. Yeah. So those are the two basic like modes. And the thing that ends up being really cool is in Griftlands, there is a sense that the world remembers what you do. So if you kill a character and that character has friends or that character is from a faction, there's a good chance the other members of that faction will not like you and will take immediate steps to harm you, even if those steps are indirect. So for instance, I definitely killed – I had a moment where I was like a friend of mine came under attack. It was kind of like random events pop up on the map as you're going about your jobs. And I went to one of these random events. I was like, oh, my friend is under attack. And it was like a bounty hunter or a cop or something. And so I fought them back. And in combat, when you knock a character down to their final HP, like down towards their last HP, they surrender. And you have a choice. Do you kill them or not? And I was like, fuck this. Like, I'm here for my friend. I got my friend's back. Do not roll up on Vellum or whatever the person's name was. And I killed this bounty hunter. And immediately it was like, so-and-so, you know, doesn't like this. I think it was in a public place also. I think this was like, I should have just done this in the bar.
No.
But the
You're
way
the
that
market.
They, right, the way that this influenced me was from then on, at the beginning of every conflict, I had a fucking argument against me on the enemy side that was like, don't trust this person. Don't trust me. Don't trust Austin. The beginning of – because everyone was like, spread the word far and wide. Don't fucking trust Austin. And so that was something I had to deal with every fucking time at the beginning of every fight was – every like negotiation was they had an argument in play already that would do a certain amount of damage because they'd heard that I was a fucking killer. And they were right. I did kill that person. But also if you kill someone, you also can get stuff that is useful to you because you get a reputation that is like, oh, they're a bounty hunter who doesn't take shit. They're out here for real. And maybe you get a card added to your deck that increases your chances of like pulling a more powerful attack or whatever, right? So like there's a really cool both deck building side and also social simulation side. And it's early enough that I think that the social sim stuff is going to get more interesting. Some of the stuff that has been really cool so far has been like being in a place where I am going to get into a fight, but there's a friend of mine already in that place, like at the docks. I already made friends because I helped someone like not have to pay their debt off to the mob. You know, I pushed the mob away and let them. And so now if I get jumped on the docks, that friend is going to come into the fight with me or whatever, right? The world is just so cool and stylish. It's very much like if you like the old Star Wars, like Tales from Jabba's Palace,
yes,
or Tales of the Bounty Hunters, like that style of Outer Rim Star Wars, you know, scum and villainy type shit. The world of Griftlands is 100% that.
Yeah.
It's also just so stylish because it's all of that great clay animation and character design.
Sounds really fun.
It can be a little intimidating because it's a card game, and I know a lot of people don't play those, but it's worth trying. Because it is just like, I think it's an easy enough card game to get into for your first run because it starts you with a deck, you have your attacks, you have your defenses, you go through the tutorial, and I bet you can like find enough in the world and the characters to like it. It's very much so under development. There are like more character classes / characters to be added. Kata, you and I talked about this in relation to Nowhere Prophet, in that it is a game that has a story that like has – you're kind of going through a number of days as a given character, and as they release new characters, they'll have their own story build outs.
Right.
So also, no rush. Like this game is going to be in development
probably
for the next year before it gets a full release. And so I wouldn't like, if you're like, maybe I'll wait until it comes out. Yeah, go ahead and wait until it comes out on Steam. Like if that's a thing you want. It's $15 on the Epic Game Store right now. I really like it a lot. I think the character design is fantastic.
Also, they keep mentioning, because people keep asking, but if you do buy on Epic now, early access, you'll get the full release on either Steam or
GOG or Pumble or something.
Yeah.
Is that?
You get an option for a different storefront if you want it. Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome.
I'm excited to try it out.
You should, as someone who has been in this like card game rut with me, you're just like bouncing from game to game. you should try it. It's really cool.
I installed that and
played Fire Emblem instead.
No, and I installed, I only played Fire Emblem last week because I was in a cabin. So I brought my Switch, but my laptop is a Mac, so I can't play PC games.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got back, I installed that and Dragon Ball FighterZ because EVO happened, and it happens every year when I watch EVO. I was like, all right, I'm going to hop back into Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bad at that game still. Fighting games are hard.
Fighting games are hard. I watched some. EVO was obviously the week before, but I'm curious, Kato, if you, while you were out, like I didn't even bring up EVO stuff because I felt like you were the person on my timeline in this group that actually watched EVO stuff.
Yeah.
We're now a week away, but is there any lingering memory that you're like super into?
I mean, overall, it felt bigger this year in a way. Like, it, or like not just like as far as like attendance or anything, but like also like it felt like there were more eyes on it.
Yeah,
like more people are paying attention to EVO each year as it feels like it's getting bigger and bigger. A couple favorite moments, the fact that Sonic Fox was in two grand finals. That guy is amazing. And also like really enjoyed the grand final set for Smash. My game, which even as much as I play that game, when I watch Pro Smash, I'm like, okay, never mind. Like, I'm just going to put this
down. Is that
down.
Like the difference between your casual player? Yeah. You're like dedicated casual play and they're like hardcore top tier play.
I don't understand half the things that are happening on the screen at one time just because I don't understand how they're even moving the characters that quickly. It doesn't make sense. It's like not like to the point of wave dashing or anything, but it looks faster than any game I play, even like online with other people.
Right.
But the last set was amazing. They went MKLeo, who was playing Joker.
Yep.
Came out of losers, was down 2-0. So like I forget the other player's name.
Fuck, what was it? I watched the set too.
It was really good because he only needed one more win
and
to close it out, and then MKLeo came back and reset, which means he won three games in a row after that, and then won another three on top. It was wild. It just felt like he, after those first two like kind of setup rounds, like completely downloaded the other guy's strategy. It was really fun to watch.
Though, was it
like,
Tweak?
Tweak,
who is playing Pokemon Trainer.
Pokemon Trainer.
Which is a really fun set of fights.
Yeah. Also, Pokemon Trainer, I think, is always really fun to watch because of the so that one is, it's three Pokemon. It's Squirtle, which is small, light, and fast, but very easy to get KO'd. And then there's a kind of medium in Ivysaur, who's not as fast, hits harder, has a lot of good aerial moves. And then there's the last one, which is Charizard, who's very heavy, so harder to knock off stage, but also much slower wind up. And it was really interesting to watch when Tweak would decide when to switch to certain characters in risky moments, but it paid off. Like, he's going to go for Squirtle to get a really good combo off because Squirtle's much faster. But if Squirtle got hit once, that would have been it for that life. So it was really, really cool to see that high-level play. Evo's great. And if you didn't watch it, like, the VODs are up. I would suggest the top eight for most games. Except Sam's show, I guess, which was unfortunate.
Oh my god, we don't even need to get into it. Yeah. Fuck infiltration. Gotcha. Is what I'll just say.
Yes,
the person who won Samurai Showdown was convicted on was. I believe
that.
I'm
I think it was
it.
Convict. I think it was at
domestic
very
abuse
least
charges.
Accused and charged with.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
No,
that
convicted.
Trial came out.
The
convicted?
Word. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Convicted. I don't understand why anyone let him back into any official tournaments. The rest of the games in the top eight of that set were great. Like, that game is actually also very interesting. It's it feels. It's,
you're talking about Sam's show?
Yeah. It's like very. It's very different from a lot of the other games you're seeing because it feels like there's less, it's less about combos, it's all about the neutral game, it's all about footsies and like spacing and like having that spacing exact, because like one or two hits and like you're getting half of your health bar taken out, you know. that sort of thing. So it was a, it was an interesting watch, especially because it just looks so different from everything else on the Evo stage. But yeah, fuck Infiltration.
Fuck Infiltration.
Yep.
Anything else popping off right now in the world of video games or your lives? What else do you want to talk about? Anything else? Are we all tapped out? I have a question that I would love to ask people from the question bucket.
Yeah.
That's been on my mind, yes. And I just didn't know if there was other stuff before we get to my very important question.
I think we should go to your important question.
If you have questions, you can send them in to gaming@vice.com. This one comes in from Tommy, who says, "Hey, Waypointers, first time, long time. What does a perfect tea time look like for you? In accordance with the rules of tea time, what three conversation topics are going to, quote, draw you into the conversation? Optionally, what conversation options are going to leave you, quote, not very interested? For bonus points, what is your favorite type of tea?"
Oh,
we're now, of course, referring to Fire Emblem Three Heroes' perfect tea time minigame.
Perfect tea time.
Perfect tea time.
I haven't been able to do one of those yet.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Rob. Are you there?
You're not going to get day to that way, my friend.
Oh,
shit.
Oh.
You can't keep serving up bricks for conversation topics.
Oh,
my God.
Wow.
So, Daydu, what do you think was the punishment befitting the Dusker people? Oh, damn, weird. This has gotten tense. I should have read my notes before sitting down. I'm really sorry.
The difficulty here is most of the things that are going to get me are not going to be topic-based, because I can think of as many times when someone has, like, tried to butter me up based on being like, "You like giant robots, right?" And just completely fallen on their faces doing it, as people who like actually connect with a specific topic that I like. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's tough.
So assume this is somebody who is engaging, right? Assume this is someone who has engaging things to say about these three topics.
Why should I assume that about anyone? No, I guess so.
Well,
right?
To get
I guess
the best answer of this question.
True. That's true. Right. Assume that they will actively hit the topic in a way that's interesting, because the only differentiation here is the topic.
Right.
Right.
So giant robots, one. Some people can effectively talk to me about mechs in the way that I like to be talked to about mechs. Like, you know, whether that is like, "Hey, here's interesting stuff about particular series that you're interested in," or if that is like talking about the philosophical and political ramifications of telling stories about giant robots. That's one. That's the easy one. Two, it's probably video games. Like, I can be broad enough that, like, yeah, in Fire Emblem, one of those things would have been video games. Actually, just games in general, because it's broader than video games. I think if you picked, if on the screen it was like games, video games, and a third thing, and you picked video games over games, you would lose points.
Oh, damn.
Like, if it was prioritized that way, it would not be. It might be acceptable, but you wouldn't get the double support up option.
Shit.
And the third one would be, because this is the thing, is like the Fire Emblem stuff doesn't always, it isn't just like monks, church. Sometimes it's like a curious fact. And so that would be the third thing, would be like a curious fact, like a thing you know that you know I don't know, something interesting about the world.
Yeah.
So the third one is Atlas Obscura. No, just like that style of like a fact about the world, facts about the world is maybe what it would be. Stuff I don't know about that's like an interesting,
there's
a ton of it. Yeah, but not just general, like specifically, so maybe this is like world history or culture or something like that. Mm. Like, you know, anthropologies, perspectives on different cultures that I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
The one that I'm like bored by are all probably also predictable, because it's just like stuff you know I don't like SEO or what else? You know, stuff like
Rob's
that.
Rob's face right now.
Yeah, Rob is laughing quietly.
Rob's face.
I'm just being honest. It's not a, don't bring that shit to tea time. I'll go to the meeting. I'll pay attention during the meeting. I'll come up with SEO lists in the meeting.
He did not go to the meeting.
I did go to the meeting. It was a you didn't go to the first meeting. The first meeting was just me, Emmanuel, and Jason. There was another meeting
That's
I didn't go to.
That's the good meeting.
That was not the good meeting.
Yep.
That meeting was also bad. Everyone was doing their jobs well, but it was a. I didn't enjoy
can't
that
have
meeting.
A good tea time with SEO.
You can't have a good tea time with SEO.
SEO tea,
I don't know
maybe.
With what my perfect tea is. It depends on how sick I am when I'm drinking it. If I'm not sick at all,
sure.
It's probably something light and fruity. I like a nice peach. I like stuff like in that space. But when I am like congested. And I just want there to be a blast. I want chamomile. I want there to just be like a very fragrant floral aroma. Like gives me a better feeling than a mint tea when I'm sick, you know? Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is Fire Emblem Three Houses really needs a new mechanic that determines how sick the person is that you're asking to tea and how badly they need their whole nasal situation to be cleared out. Also, I don't know shit about tea. I know I've tried a bunch of teas, but I have friends who are like tea aficionados, and I'm not one of those.
Yeah, I mean,
fair.
Do y'all have perfect tea times in mind?
I just have to say, Kim Kelly, friend of the show,
yes.
And awesome human being, one of those tea aficionados.
Really? I didn't know
in
that.
In case
about
you
Kim.
Didn't know, Kim is like super into like you know special teas. Very, very into them.
Interesting.
Special
teas. Came in handy
special
whenever
teas.
I was sick.
Yeah.
When she was here, so.
So I guess, like, if you can guarantee a really good chamomile.
Yeah.
Like, but like it's legitimately like, bad chamomiles basically might as well not be, like, might as well just be, like, hot water.
Hot water, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But a really good chamomile is something special that I really enjoy. But it is hard enough to find that, like, I tend not to chance it.
Mm.
So I go with something a little more, like I tend to go with a black tea that's maybe a little more flavorful and can be modified with, you know, that takes a cream and a little dollop of honey,
okay.
No problem. So like an orange, pico, for instance, if I'm pronouncing that right, tends to be a good go-to tea for me. And then in terms of topics, I am always down for a good conversation about what does it mean to live well?
Oh.
What like what is the proper way to live one's life? I can talk about that all day long, provided you don't suck.
That conversation's really bad.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like if you're just talking to somebody terrible, like that conversation immediately, you just have to jump out the window, and you know, hit the chute. So like basically, like you can't have a perfect tea time with somebody bad. Like all this stuff presumes that someone is roughly a good conversation partner who you will be able to stand by the end of it. So life well lived, good topic. Obscure military and political history.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Give me that. Touches on philosophy, touches on, military history that I can really get into, but I don't want to talk about like Stephen Ambrose books. Like if you're going to be bringing like, hey, you read Band of Brothers. It's like, yeah. When I was like 10. And then sports politics.
Sure.
And that can be the politics of sports, or that can be the politics within sports around, you know, trades, career maneuvers, et cetera.
Helmets, for instance.
So,
whether
yep.
So what helmets, for instance, whether or not actually Antonio Brown has a good argument, which he might. Apparently.
He might have a good argument.
Like, apparently it's not that. Apparently his helmet is uncertified only because it's old, but might actually still be fine. They just no longer certify helmets that old.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? But see, this is the stuff I could talk about all day long.
It's very funny.
Over tea.
Over a nice, yes, exactly.
But if you're somebody who's like, Antonio Brown should get out there and play fucking football. For that kind of money, I would, and I'll be like, oh dear, I finished my tea and I must go.
I think it's more of you might throw your tea upon them if it's that bad.
Yeah, I think that is a conventional enough badness, though, that you got to be able to just, like, peace out. Like, that's not tea throwing, because otherwise you'd just be running up on people throwing tea on them right and left. If, like, if that was your button, wrong. You would just be out there, like, there'd be a warrant out for you. You'd be, like, the tea splasher or something like that. Because, like, oh, man, somebody's got, like, a shitty regressive take about sports.
Yeah.
Please give me the hottest tea, Earl Grey hot. I must go right this wrong. Like, No, I'm not wired that way.
True.
Cato, Danielle.
Cato, do you want to go?
Yeah.
Please.
I like green tea.
Okay. I like green tea.
I also like... This counts. I like kombucha.
Okay. Yeah. Does that count?
Yeah, it's tea. It's tea!
It's the same tea. Way yogurt is made of
that's
milk.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
It's
a tea drink. It's made with that substance.
It's a tea drink.
I don't know that it's tea.
You can't
it's
do tea. That. You can't do that.
If you invited me out to tea and what you were really inviting me out for was kombucha, I'd be like, this is not the same. Why didn't you say, do you want to get some kombucha?
Here's the thing. I will more often than not, and this has to do with the weather, but... will 99% of the time go for a cold drink over a hot drink.
No, I get that.
So.
Wait, including coffee?
Yeah. Iced latte. Oh, yeah.
I like a nice latte.
I'm with you.
Hell yeah.
But I'm
like,
with you.
I like a hot
brew.
Latte even with you. Sometimes in hot weather. Like, we were back in, remember I was like, it was between 70 and 80 this week.
Yeah.
We're back in hot latte for me.
Yeah.
I drink a nice coffee.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm still straight in. Put ice in my drink, please.
You're from Florida.
I prefer ice
I'm from
all
Florida.
Year round. I'm
Everything has to be cold. Right. I also run hot. Like, even in, like, 70-degree weather, I'll be sweating if I'm in the sun too long. Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing. But if I have to go to warm tea, which I do partake of in the winters.
I partake of a warm tea in the winters.
Green tea is my go-to.
Get off the podcast. Is this a warm beverage in the winter? I love to partake.
Is this
is my favorite.
This
is tea.
This is tea.
Also, can I just say chamomile, not tea?
What? What do you mean it's not
a
tea?
Oh boy,
infusion. It's an infusion. It's not tea. It doesn't got tea in
you're
it.
You're kidding me.
No.
First of all, chamomile pops up in Fire Emblem. So
yeah, I know. People call it tea. It's legit. It's legit. But tea is a specific type of plant.
Mm.
You do not get to say,
I love that
I'm going to serve kombucha. But
oh boy.
Chamomile.
Look kombucha
off.
Is made
like,
from
you can't
black
make that
tea.
Move.
Kombucha is made from black tea. Chamomile isn't tea. It's an infusion. It's a flower infusion.
It's an herbal tea, is what
it's
you're saying.
It's an herbal tea. Yeah, it's not. There's no tea in it. People call it tea because you make it the same way you make tea.
What, is there another word for it?
Besides an infusion.
But an infusion's too broad. If I say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have an infusion later, you might think that I'm, like, about to become, like, a robot cyborg.
An herbal infusion.
Yeah, you might be stem cell infusion. Exactly.
Right, who knows?
All right.
That's why people say tea. I'm just saying.
T-Zane. Or
what?
Tizan, apparently.
Tizan?
T-S-A-N-E-S.
Oh, interesting.
T-I-S-A-N-E-S.
Huh.
Tizan. An herbal tea. Archaic, a medicinal drink or infusion, originally one made with barley.
Ooh.
I'll just change this question to be a tea or tizan.
Perfect. There we go. So I guess that's the topic. The difference between tea and tizan.
That's
I'd
it.
I'd be into talking. You know what? Actually, in general.
The conversation got lively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
In general.
Facts about the world. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. I want to learn. This is what you're talking about.
Any sort of semiotic conversation.
Right.
I find really interesting.
Oh,
because I'm bad at parsing things a lot of the time, and I'm very interested in what other people think words mean.
Right.
You know?
Like sauces, for instance. For instance.
God, oh, boy.
Yeah, no, agreed. The conversation did get lively. I think
it did. It was fun. There were some disagreements, but that's still good conversation.
Yeah.
I too also would, I can talk about games of any sort forever. Although I don't know, I'm having trouble with the third one though. But probably
Pokemon.
Well, that's like more specific you like? Under. True. Well, here's the thing. I feel like I think what it would be is probably, and this has to be a certain type of person too. If the person is not somehow implicated in a career choice or work that is kind of like unethical in a way, where I can enjoy hearing someone talk about their work. Like when somebody's really mm-hmm. enthusiastic mm-hmm. about a thing that they do as a career, that always is kind of interesting to me. But I can only really be on board if that career isn't also like, yeah, I'm like an exec at Amazon or something, right? So barring general, the thing that you are most dedicated to and are enthusiastic
the
about.
The other person's passions.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I like that. Is there a thing that you would not? Is there a thing that you're like, wow?
I'm trying to think. I mean, here's the thing. I'm bad at talking to people in general. Yeah. So what happens, it's less. They also have to be interested in talking more than me. In general.
So
for
if
all
they're just like
things.
Someone, so is that topic then like, tell me about you?
Right. Yeah. And yeah. Like if you throw it back on me too much, I'm like, I don't want to have as much to say, I feel like.
Right.
But I feel like I'm better at bouncing off someone who has more to say or like, I don't know.
I feel you.
Yeah.
Rob?
Conversations are hard.
What were you about
well,
to
the thing
add?
That goes wrong in Fire Emblem is you'd be like, oh, I know this thing about this person. Surely they'll be interested in talking about it. But instead you get like a blah, no.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, do you have the same thing that I do kind of with like some military history where it's like, yeah, I'm into that, but like on probably a slightly more serious level than you are? Like, is that you for art history? Like, if somebody's like, hey, I want to talk about art. Are you like gripping the armrest and being like, oh boy, I don't think you do.
No, I think you want to.
Yeah,
I feel like. I just feel like a lot
that Nighthawks,
of art history is. Yeah, it's, you know, conversations about art are interesting in, I think, contemporary circles. Like, but I feel like I'm way too out of my element at this point for that. Not that there isn't, you know, revisionism happening in our history all the time, but a lot of it does feel like, at least if you're talking to me about shit that's already in the history books, like that's not ever going to be interesting again. It's like, this has already been talked to death about. If there's something new, something that has been missed by history, that'd be cool as hell. But I feel like in order to be, I feel like that almost falls into the, like someone's got to be in that career and passionate about it to know that much about that topic for it to be interesting, right? Like that kind of falls into that sphere. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'd be interested in hearing about people's like, this is the art I saw recently. But art history as it stands is generally just like, you know, it's I've learned it for so long that it's like it's less interesting because it feels so kind of, unfortunately in a way, solidified.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Daniel, I need to know what would make your perfect tea time.
I adore a good iced mint tea.
Ooh.
I almost never sweeten tea or coffee, but a little. This is a treat. This is tea time. So like a little, gently sweetened with some little tiny touch of honey, little tiny bit of like raw sugar, just something nice, very light, like a delicious, refreshing, very minty iced tea. That's the way to my heart. It's right there. It's beautiful. And I will say, like Kato, iced. I prefer iced all year round. Like cold brew, that's what I drink all year round. I just hell like yeah. it. It's strong. Hell it's yeah. good. It gives, right
love
there.
That shit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's delicious. Well-made cold brew is just, it's, oh. The three topics And again, this is assuming somebody who is both engaging and, you know, interesting and has something to say about these things. It's not just somebody sidling up and being like, hey, blah, 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 like the, you know, baseline kind of thing. But immersive sims and like it's sort of game design generally. But
yeah,
of course, towards my favorite genres, immersive sims and 3D platformers. And, I would take any kind of like good, fun game design discussion. I'm just endlessly fascinated. No matter what I know about this industry, no matter who I know, no matter what I go to, no matter what I make in crappy little games in my own time, I'm just endlessly fascinated by the process of like really interesting game design and the way that designers have come towards certain decisions in any given well-produced project is like all day, every day. I could be fascinated by this. So any of those discussions, of course, we'll say jiu-jitsu. We'll say especially like we can say combat sports, but especially like women in MMA and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like anybody in grappling, anybody in jiu-jitsu. I could talk all day about that. I would enjoy a good discussion with another jiu-jitsu player and like how your game is evolving, how my game is evolving. Oh my God, these things that I'm able to do now that I couldn't do 6 months ago. Like that's right. Never not fun to kind of have one of those. And for my third one, this is dorky and also pretty broad, but similar, Austin, to your feelings on like, oh, interesting facts about the world. I get that way about like very, very similarly, like cool science facts, like this cool thing about the moon, you know, like this cool thing about space travel, this cool thing about, you know, the way in which trees can grow in certain conditions, like weird, interesting science facts are that for me. Absolutely. 100%. And the thing that is like the ultimate killer for me, especially. So there are like vanishingly few people I feel comfortable enough to have like a really in-depth political discussion with. Yeah. Because political discussions obviously are useful and necessary in all aspects of life. But there are so few that aren't either insulting my intelligence or somebody just trying to prove that they know more than me or just getting really, really, really painful. That would really be if somebody I don't know is somebody I don't know where they're coming from. And I am just at the point in my life that I'm at, I'm kind of like, I don't need to talk about this with you. I'm going to have my delicious tea and I'm going to run really fast in the opposite direction.
Well, I hope that we all get our own perfect tea times in the future.
Yeah.
I hope that if you're listening at home, you also get a perfect tea time. You deserve it. We all deserve a perfect tea time.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
On that note, yeah. I think we should wrap things up and maybe we should go get some tea because it's lunchtime and I could eat and drink some tea and snacks. That's what we're doing for lunch now. Yeah, we're just going to get tea and snacks. You can follow everything we do.
Waypoint.vice.com,
twitter.com/waypoint. Follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Kato, how about you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
And Danielle.
At Danielle R.I.
As always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And tune in later this week. Well, I think we're gonna try to do waypoints again this week. We're gonna try to get back to our waypoints, our regular waypoints episode. So look forward to that. Until then, Danielle, what do we say to them?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You guys want to talk about the ghosts we think are haunting this monastery? That's always a good barn burner conversation.
That's a good one. I love that. I love to talk about the ghosts. Cute nights that you might like. Bad dates.
Aww. Yeah.
Classic Manuela conversations.
Bad dates.
It's tough, though. Like, it's 50-50. Like, yeah. Either that kid's going to love ghosts or they hate ghosts because they're convinced they're real.
Ghosts, yeah.
You're like, totally. Want to share some ghost stories? And it's like, a ghost killed my family. It's like, damn,
fuck. I didn't know.
I should have checked your character sheet before.
Yeah, I should have looked at it said where it says hates ghosts because they killed my family. Interests, not ghosts. Anything but ghosts. Yeah.
All right. Looks like my recording is good.
Yes. Everything looks okay on my end. Thumbs up.
And you're there. You're at time buddies. Let's do 40. It's coming up. It's right there. Okay.
I had a skip too, but it felt right.
Felt all right?
I think we got it. It felt good.
When you're on the beat, it doesn't matter if it skips.